Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Taste the Mediterranean through March 19th at Whole Foods Market. Save on animal welfare certified bone-in beef short ribs, sustainable wild-caught sockeye salmon, and more. Find sales on Parmigiano-Reggiano, charcuterie and ground lamb. Grab an olive boule bread from the bakery. Plus, wines from the Mediterranean start at just $8.99. Taste the Mediterranean now at Whole Foods Market. Must be 21 plus. Please drink responsibly.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we get into podcast, please hit subscribe. I know I say it every week, but it just keeps the podcast going. And please share it with your mates if you liked it. The more people that listen, the more likely this podcast keeps going. It's a labor of love at this moment in time, but I love doing it and I love talking to all the artists that I get on, and I hope you appreciate it. So, podcast time, and this week is the one and only Tim Green. I've known Tim's music for a very long time, from early Dirty Bird days, and I've seen his progression in the industry and his evolution of his sound over the years, from the Dirty Bird to then the more techno and to where he's kind of sitting at this moment in time in the more organic genre of house, of what he calls organic house. Really interesting music, very musical, very listenable music as well. Signed to All Day I Dream and various other record labels in that genre. But it just feels really, really authentic to him. So I thought I'd get him on the conversation, or I'd get him on the podcast to have a conversation. And I love this conversation. It's an hour and 45 minutes long. It's a good one. So without further ado, Mr. Tim Green, what's cooking, man?
Trying to stay awake is still what's cooking, I guess.
Why? What's happening? What's going on?
I don't know, just my daughter... It just turned two, and it's like still a total up and down world of, you know, when she decides to wake up or when she decides not to sleep, and, you know, mixed with working at home, touring and everything else, you know. So it's all like erratic, probably is the best way to sort of say it. Other than that, like, wicked, all good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. It's really interesting you say that, because I obviously, it was ADE a couple of weeks ago. When this comes out, it would have been like a month ago.
Yeah.
But for me, there was a huge topic of, like, everybody I saw, it was like talking about kids. I'm talking about either having kids, and I guess, like, we're all at that age now where, like, we've all kind of got a bit older and everyone's having kids. So it's like a conversation that everyone's talking about, whether they want kids or whether they have kids or it's the best decision of their life, et cetera, et cetera. And it's
some... I hope it was all positive.
Pardon?
I hope it was all positive and not like, oh, what did I do? What did I do to my life having these kids and everything?
I've got friends that have kind of said that, where they don't regret it. but it completely changes their life to before to what it was beforehand, and they're kind of in situations where they didn't think they would be. But I think that's also naive to think that your life's not going to change when you start looking after a human being.
Exactly.
How have you found it?
Honestly incredible. Like, nice. the negative sides of it are so irrelevant, you know, in balance to the positive side. Like, it's completely changed my life, but I kind of thought it would anyway. I've never been happier. I've never been more relaxed. The thing that I sort of tell everyone, for me anyway, is like, it sort of shuffled my life around in such a good way, where before it was like, you know, you had all these things you wanted to do, all these things floating around your mind every day. You wake up, you had all these things to do. Now it's just kind of like a pyramid. Yeah. My daughter's on top, everything else below doesn't matter. You know, so it's just kind of like, as long as she's good, everything else will sort itself out, you know, and I'll just get on with it. And it's just made me more relaxed and with everything, to be honest, because I just realized actually it's like I just kind of care about her and everything else, you know. And like, it's, and I'm not saying like I don't care about anything else, but it's just like I'm a kind of a natural worrier anyway. So instead I would now I just worry less, and I just, because I'm kind of like, well, it's all right, like it'll work itself out. And it does, you know, like worrying is just kind of a waste of a time anyway, so
massively.
It doesn't change anything. So
I guess from people, I don't have kids, but I guess from people that I've seen in the industry, there's two ways it can go. It can either really refocus you on your career and go, okay, I've got somebody that I need to look after and pay the bills and kind of up my game. Or it goes, you know what? I don't actually want to be in the studio anymore. I don't want to be doing this. And it can kind of does the opposite, and they go and do their own thing. How have you found it with that?
Oh, I think I found it massive. Well, yeah, it didn't make me want to like stop doing music at all. I think it definitely focused me as well. I have less time, you know, that's a given. That's an obvious thing. Yeah. So I think I think that kind of helps me. I think it kind of makes me sort of, when I do get the time to get into a studio now, in my studio, it's just kind of like, I really have to focus on what I need to do and not spend, you know, 7 hours tinkering on, you know, something that's not that important and just be like, you know, what's the goal? Finish the song. So finish the song, you know, like just get on with it. Don't dream about it for so long, sort of a thing. So it definitely, it's kind of helped me. From a Muse point of view as well, as I said, I'm just like happier. My daughter's wicked. Like I love spending time with her. I love being with her, and equally the heart kind of grows fonder because, you know, traveling a lot, like I miss her when I go away. So when I come back, it's also quite I think I'm quite lucky that I kind of get to go away and come back. You know, totally. It's quite tough on my wife because she's 24/7 with our daughter, and it's, you know, it can be tough, you know, like she has to go through a lot. So I'm like massively thankful for her because she's, you know, it's, very forgiving for the fact that I'm a DJ and able to sort of go away and get a mini break. You know, I sleep more now when I'm on tour than when I'm at home, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Absolutely ridiculous. I shouldn't be that way around, you know, like, but it is. So, to go back to your question, yeah, it's really helped me. And like, I'm just happier, and I'm the sort of person also that's like, when I have a kind of like a happy personal life, it's, I have a better, you know, work life, or music life, let's call it, you know.
Yeah, I can massively relate to that. If things are going on mentally for me, like, I struggle to write in the studio at all.
Me too.
Like, it's a drag. I just don't nowadays.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, it's not happening. There's no point in me trying. Because I'll get even worse, because I won't be able to make anything good, and then it will make me even more depressed. And I'm like, fuck this.
Yeah, you're talking with, it's a mirror, honestly. Yeah. It's exactly the same with me. And it's knowing that now, isn't it? And I do what you said. I'll walk away and I'll stop and I'll be like, I don't care. Like, it's fine. If today's not a day when I'm able to write anything good or that I'm happy with, I always know it's what you said. Like, I've got something in the back of my mind, clearly, even if I don't know what it is yet, I've got to work it out. And then I'm like, I need to get that done before I can, I just need a kind of like a clear slate and a clean kind of a mind, you know, sort of when doing music. So
it's a weird industry as well, because I think it's not a 9-to-5, which you can, not all the time. I know, I'm sure you have friends. I have friends that like work their ass off in their 9-to-5s, and it's not 9-to-5s. It's like 8-to-8, if you know what
exactly.
I mean. But I think with ours, because it's like we turned our passion into a career, I don't think that, I don't know about you, but for me, it's like it never switches off. And I literally had I had one of my mates over who I haven't seen in a while last night, and we were just chatting, and he was like, "Mate, your brain never stops, does it?" And he was like, "It must suck when you go to bed." And I was like, "Yep, it does, because it's like you go to bed and then you're thinking what you need to do or what aren't you doing, blah blah blah." Are you still at that point? Where you have your daughter, you have like other responsibilities, that kind of mellows down a little bit.
I think it's possibly mellowed down a little bit, but it's not like it's still not comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, like I think it's still there. I'm the same as you. Like, yeah, I never kind of switch off. And it's a funny thing, isn't it? Like, I don't know what's better. Like, you know, if we want to compare the kind of, you know, the, as you said, like the normal day 9-to-5 like job or something, I'm not sure if. Because I think equally, we obviously kind of have a lot of freedom, obviously, with what we do as well. You know, it's massive. Not like, so, you know, like we just said, like if we want to walk away from the studio because we're not into doing the music or whatever, or, you know, something's not working, then we do. When we don't have a boss standing behind us saying, "Wait, you should be at your desk, like, get on with it." So we do kind of have that freedom. But yeah, equally, it's like the mental kind of a stress that we put on ourselves, the pressure, which is, you know, as we know, is like to a degree quite healthy because it can drive you, but it can also be kind of a detriment at times, and different with, you know, varies from individual to individual. But I think it's not, it's weird, isn't it? It's such a... I mean, I've never switched off from music in my life. I think I've just always had that, like, just, you know, just complete gravitation towards music. And it's just, it's been my life through and through. So I guess I'm kind of used to it. I don't know if that makes it better or not, you know, not sure.
Yeah, I think it's just as long as you can manage it, right? As long as it's not overpowering everything where you're, like, actually not enjoying the process.
Yeah. I think, and again, it can be hard because if you don't, writer's block is a process, is a part where you don't enjoy the process.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the thing where you just, like, it can be really tough. And you know, I don't think of writer's block as just like it's that full on, you can't write any music. There's so many in between gradients of like, oh, you can do stuff, but it's just not, you know, it's just not that good, or it's not what you love, or it's not how you hear it or see it in your head, sort of thing. So it's I think to have faith in yourself just to sort of continue doing it and trust that, you know, you can do it is probably what gets you through regardless, I reckon.
The fact that you just said that, do you think writer's block actually isn't a thing called writer's block? It's just a thing that you're trying to do something different that you haven't done before? Because I think for me it's like, it's easy to say I've got writer's block, but it's like I could write a record that I wrote last week again, but I can't write what I've got in my head to progress forward. So is it the fact that it's writer's block, or is it the fact that you're actually just trying to progress yourself as an artist and as a writer and as a songwriter, like that you just haven't got there yet? Just like training in the gym, like I can't lift this weight yet, but in a month's time I can lift this weight.
But I literally never thought of it that way. I think you're probably right. Yeah, I think you're probably right. I literally never thought of it like that. It's not... Well, here's like a caveat a little bit. Do you think there are artists out there that... There are some people that just try and write the same track every time, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
It's a terrible thing.
I don't know. I mean, each to their own, you know, like
whatever makes you happy.
I think your mic keeps on cutting out for some reason.
Does it?
Yeah, it's like really distorted, unless it's me.
I think it's fine here.
Okay, maybe it's me.
It might be your end.
Maybe it's my dodgy headphones.
Keep my speech. Yeah, I think I think we're good. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I think it's my dodgy headphones. Okay. Cheap headphones.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, right? Is I'll be honest, I like to have a bit more faith, but I think there's at this moment in time there's a lot of people writing the same music to get somewhere rather than writing music that they love. But I don't think that's because they necessarily love music. I think it's because they love the idea of being in the music industry. And I think it then takes them, it will eventually take them time to get to a point where they're making the music that they love. I think I've had that in my career. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole part of the process. I think just nowadays it's more elevated because you can have a lot more success very quickly in this industry compared to what we did when we started.
Yeah. Plus, we're much more naked and visible nowadays due to social media. Like, your decisions are kind of quite quickly judged and reflected and discussed and worked out. Like, if you do something slightly different to what you're doing now, even as a beginner artist, or if, you know, you're still trying to find your path, people pick up on it. They're like, well, why are you doing this and not that? You know, it's like you're almost not allowed to make that decision unless you've got, you know, proper conviction or reason or something, you know, other than just being allowed to be an artist, you know, just be able to express yourself. Like, we're not really allowed that option easily.
Why do you think that is?
Because people like to categorize. It's a problem with everything. Like, people need to know what you are, what you're about, what you do, what direction you are. And when people latch on, and also, you know, and I understand it. And I think we're all the same with, you know, any artist in any genre. When an artist starts to develop or change or go into a different, you know, direction or whatever, people just like it. But you'll start to get these different, you have some who like it no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be the ones that will be like, no, it's not as good as his earlier stuff or her earlier stuff or whatever. And then, you know, that's, you know, through all the history, artists have been like that. You know, Bob Dylan is a great example. Like, there's just so many iterations of Bob sort of a thing where, you know, well, not so many, but, like, you know, there's several sort of like the main ones that people talk about, and some people like all of it, some people just like one, some people and the other don't like the others or whatever. But yeah, people just kind of like they like a sound and they want to be able to have more of it. You know, people just want more of that kind of a thing, for because it, you know, music can make them feel good and take them to places and everything else. So you know, it's understandable, like, people want that kind of consistency to know, you know, that you're going to get something new or something more that's similar to what they already like, I guess. Totally. So
yeah, I guess we don't like change, do we?
Not really.
I guess I could, like, it was the same for me, I guess, like, growing up as a kid, like, you're listening to like an artist and then they bring out another album like 2 years later and it sounds completely different. You're like, no, I just want what you did before, just give me it.
yeah exactly. It's funny.
How have you found that? Because your sound has evolved massively over the years. As an outsider, like, please tell me if you think completely different, but like, I first came across you when you released, I think, Kitchen on Dirty Bird. I actually still play that record sometimes because it's fucking amazing. if you haven't heard, when did that come out? Like 2008?
Oh, I'm so bad with years, but I think that sounds right. Yeah. I think that sounds right. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I was living in Ibiza at the time and I would play it all the time. Such a good record. and to now where your sound has kind of evolved into, I don't know how you would describe it, but I would describe it more melodic, kind of melodic house, melodic techno kind of vibes, but like the on the good side of the spectrum rather than the trance that's being made at the moment. Like, how have you, I think obviously, like, what we spoke about, we all evolve as artists, but what I really want to talk about is how have you like told the story to your fans? And because people move with you and you leave people and people come with you, vice versa, etc. But I think the way you've done it has worked really well. Like, was there like a plan, or were you just like, this is what I want to do and I'm just going to do it?
There definitely wasn't a... I mean, it was a conscious decision. It was all natural, I guess, from the music side of things.
Yeah.
From a plan point of view, no, there wasn't some like grandmaster plan of how to do it or how to roll it out or anything else. It happened very gradually, and I think it probably happened more gradually to me because it was obviously going on behind the scenes much more. I was probably still writing songs which weren't necessarily what I was happy with, or just in terms of style, let's say, like it wasn't exactly my style. And I'd already was changing like my kind of sound behind the scenes, but I wasn't necessarily releasing it or trying to pursue it so much. And I've done that probably, I don't know, a few times in my career sort of a thing. And because one, I get bored and I like to try new things. I kind of want to do stuff differently. And two, because I kind of see scenes changing as well. So it is a bit of a conscious kind of a thing where I'm kind of like, I'm not sure this is kind of for me, or to be more honest, I don't think a lot of these scenes were ever for me.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever completely, you know, fitted in somewhere, and that's down to me, nothing to do with the scene. It was kind of like, I mean, I'm happy that you say that you think I've done it in a good way, but I didn't really announce a big change to too many people, or, you know, I wasn't kind of like going on social media and sort of saying, okay, now this is the sound that I'm doing. You all have to take a leap of faith, take a decision. Are you with me or you're not? You know, it's not, nothing like that. It's just kind of like, I just gradually did it. I just started releasing music more, which was getting closer to what I loved, the sort of sound that I preferred and felt more comfortable with. And I think a lot, you know, just naturally, exactly as you said, like, I think a lot of people got put off by it and left and probably weren't so interested anymore. And then obviously got new followers and everything else and new fans. But I feel like I did it quite gradually, but just naturally, because I was kind of transitioning anyway. So I didn't like quickly be like, okay, I'm now this kind of a sound. I was kind of like, you know, like, for example, like when I was doing like more techno stuff on Cocoon and everything, I was like the least techno artist on that label. You know what I mean? Like, I was like the honorary Cocoon member. You know what I mean? I was the black sheep of the Cocoon, which I always knew. And, you know, everyone always knew it, sort of a thing. And I was really happy to always work with Cocoon. I love working with them, but, you know, it would be an issue when I go to gigs, because I was never like that particularly hard. I was like doing very kind of like melodic and sometimes complex kind of melodic sort of stuff, which is, you know, there's a time and place for it, and it's not always a Cocoon gig sort of a thing, which is totally fine.
Always in a dark club with a bunch of German people, is it? Let's be honest.
Not really. You know, like at a certain hour maybe, but, you know, but even then, you know, like, people really appreciated it, but it wasn't always like that perfect sort of setting to hear my music, you know, like, people liked it. There wasn't anyone saying, oh, this is shit, or this is like just not worth it. You know, or it doesn't make sense, or like, oh, it's boring, whatever. Like, people really liked it, but it just wasn't that, you know, it wasn't the same sort of energy as like the, you know, much of the harder techno. And it's just was never my thing, you know? So, I was like sort of transitioning out of that just naturally, again, for the same reason, because I was kind of like, I feel myself going towards more melodic sort of music, because that's where I come from. I'm a musician. I played in bands, you know, was growing up all in my life. And I just wanted to be able to do that more. And so I just naturally gravitated towards what my ear was telling me to gravitate towards, as in the more musical side of what I just call house music, really. And it just made sense to me. And I think so many of my friends were already in the, you know, this organic house scene and everything. And I was speaking with, you know, people in that scene far more than I, you know, as friends and as peers, far more than I ever was in like this sort of techno scene.
Yeah.
Again, nothing personal, but it was just an obvious kind of like, I have much more in common musically with some of these sort of people. And I was already hanging around with him. I was already sharing music with him. I was really starting to write music similar to that. And I was just edging that way kind of naturally. So it all just did happen naturally, I would say, but it was clearly a very conscious decision for me just to sort of move more into a direction that I was happy with. And it just coincided pretty well, I think, with Organic House, I guess, is the name that everyone's calling this nowadays.
Oh, is that what they're calling it?
That's what they're calling it. That's what they're calling it. Yeah, that's the Beatport term. That's what everyone's calling it. So I don't care. Again, call it whatever you want. It's just it's an easy way to genre bracket into a genre sort of thing, a subgenre. So it's works for me. It's just music that I feel really comfortable with now that I can express myself more and more. And I think people, and I think going back to the sort of question, that's genuinely why it's worked, is because I think more now than ever, I feel like people can feel the honesty that I put into my music. It's me, it really is me.
Yeah.
Like the music, it's really like something that I feel very happy with. And I think it gets reflected in the reaction of the people listening to it. Like more people seem to be into what I'm doing now than what I was doing before, So
I think
it's reflective.
I think authenticity is something that people can really kind of see through.
Totally.
See through you. And even if they don't know who you are, I think like how we hold ourselves as people when we're doing something that's not necessarily inauthentic, but just doesn't feel right.
Exactly.
And it's part of the, I think it's part of the journey in life, in everything we do, whether that's friendship groups, whether that's your passion, whether that's your job. Like there comes a point, hopefully, I hope everyone eventually finds what they're there for, or their purpose for is on this planet. And
also you've got to remember that you might not have one, or you might not need to settle on one. It might change again in like a few years or something.
Totally.
Like being authentic is obviously like not like one ultimate final sort of a thing, and I mean that personally as well. People change, like life, you get older, like interests change and things change. So yeah, it's like, but you're right, finding that authenticity about yourself is tough, and I think I probably imagine it's always like an ongoing thing. I think
I agree. For me, it is massively. I guess I look at early parts of my career when I started on Dirty Bird, and then kind of moved away to do the more techno side of things, which was like almost a gateway for me to start my own label.
Yeah.
Which I knew that was the gateway, but I needed to do the techno thing to kind of get away from the Dirty Bird thing, to then bring it back a little bit, and I can then be a bit more what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's
funny, isn't it? Like, it's weird to... Does it, when you look back at that, like, does it make sense to you, like, or did it make sense to you at the time, what you were doing? Or is it like now that you look back and think you would have done it differently if you...
I'm an absolute psycho and plan everything. So like everything that I do, not everything, but like nearly everything I do career wise, there's like either a goal set or a plan made to get to where I want to get to. So for me, let's say for instance, with the Dirty Bird stuff, like I had a really great career or start of career with Dirty Bird.
Yeah.
I loved all the guys and still do, but musically I loved it at that time.
Yeah.
Like mid 2000s up until like 2018, I was maybe 2017, I was loving everything that they were putting out, and I was just like, this is the shit, if you know what
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Then for me, musically, I think I started listening to tougher records and started to enjoy different music. And at that point, for me personally, the record label, and this is purely personal opinion, like it just wasn't doing it for me. I wasn't, every time I'd get a promo, I'd be like, man, I've heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nothing really interesting about this.
Yeah.
And I felt that like every time I'd go in the studio, it's like, I can't make another fucking booty record. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it's been DJ Dion and everyone else did it years ago. Why are we trying to redo it now? So I was like, okay, I need to take myself out of the scene. I need to work the fuck out what I need to do, but I need to stop because I'm just going to be unhappy and it's not going to get me to where I want to get to. And I think also what I realized is when, as much as Dirty Bird gave me a career, it also holds you back when you're just related to one label.
And it's a specific sound, isn't it? Let's be honest with Dirty Bird, you know, and so like some of the best fans in the world, literally like diehard fans. But I found that as well, because Miu was a little bit different. Miu was kind of like, a lot of my sound at the time crossed over into Dirty Bird, but I was never like a huge like Dirty Bird fan. Like the artists, yes.
Yeah.
But not like the label, like necessarily, like, you know, like Justin and Claus and Christian and Worthy as well. Like they were just like, they were making so many good records, but not only on Dirty Bird. Like they were doing some stuff elsewhere, which I really loved and it's really cool. And again, I felt like a bit of an honorary member of Dirty Bird. I was probably like the least Dirty Bird artist on there. Like, which again, I really don't mind. It worked, you know, it would never change anything. And I loved it sort of a thing, but I think that was the difference again for me. It never really was like a true home for me because, you know, again, like it's a very American sound, you know, like, and you know what it's like when you're English and come from somewhere totally different.
Yeah.
It's not really our, it's not my kind of culture, like growing up sort of a thing, that sort of that. It's not like in me deep, that kind of American sort of a sound. So it's a little bit different. It's funny though, but
yeah,
I love them guys. They're wicked.
I think for me though, it was like, because I'm from like Bristol area, like the whole drum and bass thing, it kind of made sense for me at that time. But I think that's the thing, is like, also there comes a point where I just wanted to do new things, and I felt the Dirty Bird thing. And this, everyone listening, that this is not me digging on Dirty Bird. This is just me talking about my career.
Totally,
like,
totally.
I love the label. I love everything about them. But like, I'm British. I'm English. Like, I want to be playing in UK and Europe.
Yeah.
And there's certain record labels out there that hold you back from playing in those territories.
Yeah.
Because of your sound, and Dirty Bird is one of the main ones in that situation, where I had an amazing, I did it backwards, like I had an amazing career in America, but then couldn't even get a show in my hometown in the UK.
Yeah.
So it's like, it was kind of like this crazy thing. And I was like, okay, how do I?
Yeah.
I sat back and fired my managers and started afresh and was like, okay, I'm going to do this and work it out. And it gets there eventually. You just have to, for me, it was just like, just have to do, I have to write music that I love again.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And that's what I mean. And kind of like what you, exactly the same, like what you said, that Dirty Bird sound, like, I think the only way you can continue, and that's not just Dirty Bird, this is like any kind of a label that has quite a collective that has a specific sound. You really have to have it in you right from like your roots right up to now and everything, where you're really that sound. You're like, this is so me, this speaks to me. And that's not to say what we did was wrong, like being influenced by it and doing records that sound like it, because we got it and we put our own spin on edge on it, and that's really interesting. But for the longevity of it, when that sort of sound wants to and should continue, people like us are kind of like, well, I don't see the what I can add to this anymore.
Totally.
Whereas there are artists that are still, you know, like Claude, for example, Barclay is like perfect example, where it's like he's still doing his thing and people are loving it and it's wicked. Like, and he still sounds exactly like him.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't like had to go off and do something different, and that's amazing. But it's really in him. Like, that is him, you know, that sound is him. And that's the difference, you know. And I think we've like, you have to go off as an artist to find what that is, whatever yours is. And yeah, as we said, like, we hope that, you know, you do find it, as you know, or everyone out there sort of finds it eventually, hopefully. So.
Well, I think it's also, there's a level of what we were kind of talking about earlier, is like, of like scene jumping. I think it's really easy to, we all know there's a lot of artists out there that just jump onto what's hot. But I don't know. I'd like to get your thoughts on that. But like, do you think it actually becomes, do you think it's successful? Do you think you can become successful doing that? Or do you think it's just like,
I think you can. Each to their own. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I guess, you know, it brings kind of back to mind what we said about writing tracks. Like if there are people out there that just write the same track and over again, like I don't, you know, kill me. I'd have to commit suicide for something over that. Yeah. It's ridiculous. You know, like I need to try something different. Like I can't keep on doing the same thing. And, you know, but some people really love just to keep on nailing like bangers or whatever, or just, you know, things that just really similar to what they're doing. And you can't argue with that. Like if that's what they want to do and they enjoy it and they're just like, I just want this track to be like every time banging, banging, banging. I don't care. Like it's DJ fodder, whatever.
Yeah.
That's a reason, you know. If they want to do it and they're happy with doing it, that's fine. And if they just want to jump around every label and change their sound to whatever's current and just have another banger and have another, like, you know, I can't argue with that. But I just, you know, I personally can't do that. And it's not creative enough for me.
See, it's really interesting you say that, because like for me, it's something that I struggled with more so like after COVID, because like I spent so much time writing during COVID. But for me, the whole banger mentality, which I can hold my hands up and say that that's my life, if you know what I mean. I've spent my life trying to write bangers.
Yeah.
It's the way the music gets released for me is that the thing that I struggle with the most is that, like, nowadays it doesn't necessarily allow you, like, if you want a record to be successful, like it has to fit in this, like, something. It has to fit somewhere for it to do for it to be successful. And that's not saying that people don't like it, it's just saying that the parameters of where we release music, it has to fit so they can playlist it, so they can do whatever they do to it. How did you find that? Because I was listening to your music today and it's very listenable. It's not like, okay, this is purely just club records. It's very listenable music, and there's something I love about that.
Yeah.
How did you find that whole kind of process of like releasing it and almost kind of, it's almost not necessarily just like marketed to club people, to ravers. It's like almost like you can listen to it doing the dishes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, exactly. But I think that was, first of all, I think, you know, again, like being with Lee Burridge and Audio Dream and sort of being friends with Lee for, I worked it out the other day. It was something, I don't know how many years we've known each other, but I think it's something like 17 years or something.
Wow.
Or 15, I don't know, like long time we've known each other. He's always supported my music and stuff, so we've always been friends, and I've sort of, you know, I was going to like Audio Dream parties right from the beginning when Lee first started them and everything, as, you know, as a punter, as a friend, and to hang out with Lee. And that music's always interested me, like the, let's say, the lighter side of the house music and like the daytime sort of stuff, and something that doesn't revolve around the night starting with a warm-up DJ and then at the end it's just peak, oh my God, this is it. This is kind of like a journey where it could go in any direction. It could start off really hard and go like super chilled towards the end, you know, it's up to whatever we want to do. And so I always quite liked that, that sort of mentality. And that's what I've, you know, that's what I've found with Lee and all these other artists, that is, we sort of have a similar mentality, that it is possible, I still believe this, to fuse quite a lot of music in with, you know, beats and you know, something that's danceable. I think you can have both. It's extremely tricky to try and find what that balance is and where's the line. You can go too far one way. Musically, you can definitely go too far one way. Like, it could be too much music for, you know, like for the person on the dance floor, because it's just kind of like, well, I need, like, you know, who knows what they're on, who knows what they've taken or how drunk they are or whatever. Like, it can put, you know, it can put people in the wrong place if it's too over the top, and it can kill the mood or whatever. Totally. So it's a kind of a challenge. I quite like that. But again, I think it's me finding a sort of a genre and a sound that I feel where I can put a lot more musicality in this and instrumentation, much more than I found anywhere else within dance music. But it's still something danceable. And it's not for every raver, let's say. We're getting so many more and more followers all the time, and more people interested in the parties are like ever growing, and it's incredible. So it's kind of like people switch, either A, switch their mind or want something a little bit different, or maybe they're a bit older and they want something different, you know, practically as well. It's, you know, Leo has said as well, when he was doing the Audio Dream parties, he kind of wanted a daytime party where his older friends who are now parents who have kids can come along and still be home by 11 or 12 p.m., you know, and wake up the next day sort of thing. So, you know, it's functional almost as well, if you think about it, and it all kind of ties in together. But I think for me, musically, yeah, it's just given me the sort of freedom to be able to put as much music in and experiment, because I'm still trying to work out, like, how musical can I get things? And I love it. I've gotten away with way too much at times, I think. You know, like, and people are still, like, raving to it and stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'm doing something right, you know, and it's quite interesting. It's people are really enjoying it, you know. People are specifically, a lot of fans are like saying to me, like, please don't stop doing what you're doing. Like, I, you know, people are picking up on what I'm doing, kind of specifically with, in terms of like what I'm doing with the songs and the instrumentation I'm putting in there. Like, all the people can hear my influences, you know, everything from jazz and classical and everything else, and just like putting it all in there and me just experimenting. And I'm really lucky that people are kind of responding to it, because it could have not worked, you know. It could be quite bad.
How does it feel, the fact that people are actually digging it, and now you're at the point in your like career where you're like, I'm doing what I love, and it's, people are digging it?
Just pure happy, honestly, so happy. It's just, it's really nice. Like, it's just it's so rewarding, you know. And social media is wicked for this, you know, just to be able to connect with fans and stuff, like, and then, you know, they come along to gigs and then I chat with them and they can connect with them afterwards as well, and everything. And it's just, and just hearing like people's thoughts, it's like, it's genuine, you know. It's not, and I guess I feel it's genuine also because I know the effort that I put into these songs and how much I've kind of like time and my, you know, my blood, sweat and tears and everything has gone into it, that when they turn around and specifically say, you know, this section of the song or this, I heard this, or it reflects that and my time in my life and helped me get through. I've had so many people say, like, this song has helped me got through this bad time, and, you know, especially during COVID as well, like, obviously a lot of stuff happened. And, you know, when people say that, it's just, it's like the ultimate reward. It's just kind of, I'm so happy that just something that I created and put out there and become, you know, more important to someone else than it can be to me, you know.
Way, like, this more important.
Yeah, like the I kind of believe also that there's, you know, a song can have much more meaning to someone else than it can be to me. And I don't know how you feel about that, but when you release music, I kind of feel like this is not mine anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it came from me, but it's kind of like, you know, this is what anyone else kind of, how they want to respond to it and how it affects them, that's up to them, you know. Well, positive or negative.
I don't know about you, but I like, when I'm writing in the studio, I don't really think about like what people are going through and how this is going to affect them and how this can help them. Like, for me, this is purely, is this record the best I can possibly make it?
100%. Is that a selfish thing? I don't think it's a selfish thing, is it? It's just we're getting on with the job at hand, I guess.
I think realistically it's about, we want to be the best at who we possibly can be at that time in that time of life. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I think that's healthy. I think it's quite, I don't know, because I know you write songs, like actual songs, with, under like another alias. Is it Invisible Minds?
Yes. Yeah.
So like, I don't know how you Is that you singing as well?
I can't remember. So Invisible Minds, I don't do anymore. And it was a one-off kind of a project, which was, in my mind, it was what I thought of as a live band project. Let's call it that, like a proper band sort of like project. The music that you can go and listen to, the album that I released, that's all me. Pretty much that's all me apart from the guest vocalist. So like all of the music is me, written, performed, recorded, etc. But the vocal, I don't know if there was a song on there with my voice or not.
Yeah.
So long ago. Maybe one or two, but they're like tiny vocals. And for the proper vocals, no, it's guest vocals.
Because I guess that's the thing is like for me is maybe if I was releasing records with my voice on, and like when I have a singer, I write the lyrics with the singer or with a writer, but for me it's like more so how do we make the best song rather than me trying to get my feelings across. But I think if it was more of a much more personal project to me, where like I'm writing a song, I'm singing a song, I'm producing a song, and then I'm letting it out, and that song's about my long lost lover or something. Yeah. Maybe I think that would be a little bit more personal to me. And maybe I could talk about what that song's about for me. But I think with what I do now, it's just have it.
Yeah.
go do what you want.
Yeah, no, I think mine's kind of a mix, an in-between mixture of what you described and then like, let's say a vocalist or whatever, because I agree with you. Like, I don't think it's as personal because it's definitely not, you know, because it's, like lyrics and a human voice is, there's a lot less interpretation to be had, isn't there? You can kind of like, you know, lyrics say a lot. You can kind of read them, listen to them and be like, okay, I think they mean this. I'm pretty sure they're talking about that. Whereas a song, just an instrumental or something, is kind of like that's a total like, interpretation. Like, who knows what they're trying to think. But I guess with the music that I'm doing now, because of the more musicality that's involved and the softer sort of side of it and the more instrumentation and everything, it's definitely edging towards that, where I have songs which specifically I, you know, when I play them, I feel the emotion that I was feeling at the time.
Yeah.
And I never used to have that. Because I was writing more stuff that was just kind of like, this is going to be a wicked track. This is going to be cool. This is like a banger or something, you know, like, whereas now I think I'm in touch more with that kind of like the deeper and emotional side that, I have moments in there that definitely to me, it's not all of them. Like there's certain records to me, which are extremely personal, you know, extremely kind of like, and I'm a very nostalgic person anyway. And I've, actually, like the biggest thing that I always kind of draw upon when in the studio is like past memories or past feelings, not like something specific, but just kind of like a past feeling that I like, that I don't know, that I had. It could be anything from like hanging out with friends years ago, like a moment or a trip away or something, you know, there's a feeling or something there, which I always like to kind of like hold on to, and I just kind of use that as a bit of a like positive stem, you know, or something just to kind of draw upon. So, and those songs then remind me of that kind of memory or feeling sort of thing. So it does get a little bit personal, but yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's as much as if I, you know, like a singer would or something. Yeah. I think that's quite, that can be very revealing, I guess.
I've always loved the idea of releasing of me singing, like just going in with like a proper writer as well, and like actually just being like, okay, I can't sing for shit, but still like let's try it and let's just see how it feels to kind of put music out that's like
put that emotion onto something. I think it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's really scary. I think for any kind of a songwriter that is able to be in touch with those kind of, you know, and reveal those personal feelings, you know, especially people who are huge artists that really, you know, put it all out there. I think like that's some balls, you know, like that's really like, that's doing it proper.
Yeah. And you can really feel it, like like let's say for instance, like on the biggest scale, like Bon Iver and Taylor Swift, that record, Exile, and you like really listen to the lyrics and you're like, this is dark as fuck. Like, this is a dark record. And also that's my interpretation on that record. It could be like, I don't know if you, do you know the record?
I do, yeah.
So it could be like about the best breakup of their life because they're finally leaving each other. But it could also be the worst part of one of their lives. Like, you never know. So I guess it's like, how do I put my life onto that record? How can I relate to that record using my life? And I think that's the thing that a lot that I guess, I guess since this conversation, I've never really thought about it, because I've had the same situation with you where like people on social media are like, oh my God, this record's got me through really tough times. And like, I don't know, records for me haven't gotten me through tough times, but there's records that I remember certain periods of my life. And I'm like, Frank Ocean record, like the first Frank Ocean record for me, like I remember exactly what happened at that time when that came out. Like I split up with like a long-term girlfriend. I moved into a new house. Like I was loving life. It was like the best time of my life because I was like, let's do it. Not saying that relationship was bad, but it was actually great. But like it was a very transitional time in my life. And every time I listen to Frank Ocean, it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
But I guess we have all of, we all have that. Do you have anything like that where you're like, this record was
so many.
Yeah.
Absolutely so many. My earliest one, which is just like my favorite, which is, I think it's my favorite song ever because it's, I'm so nostalgic about it. It's the track Valerie by Steve Winwood, you know, like which is the Caller Me Prince sample. But that, the original is just, like, I mean, my parents are a really big Steve Winwood fan, and I just remember listening to that. We went on a holiday. I think it was like wasn't somewhere too far. It was just like a caravan holiday or tenting holiday or something, like to Somerset or something like this. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I still have exactly the same image of like, and I've spoken to my parents about this more recently to define exactly what, if what I remember is true, and they confirmed, that's 100% true. And it was basically me waking up in the car and the sunrise coming up, and then us pulling over to stay somewhere because we'd driven through the night, basically, it would happen. And I thought it was kind of like, a fake kind of like memory or something. And it wasn't until like, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, I asked them about it. They're like, no, that's 100% true. And that song, we were listening to Steve Winwood. It was the only tape we had in the car. And I was like, okay, there we go. So like, it's like those things do, work. The songs and the memory are, completely, attach themselves to each other, which I think is amazing. So
have you, when you go into the studio, have you like tried to, obviously what you were saying about kind of recreating those feelings, have you ever like gone into the studio with a record and go, I really love this record and I really want to make a record that's very similar to this, and got to a point where you're like, I just physically can't do it because it's so hard.
You mean can't do it because it's so hard to copy the original, or can't do it because I am copying the original?
Because it's the what you said first time.
I think every time I've kind of gone in with that mentality is I've never seen it through, or I've always then started to divulge off into my own kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like it's been a really great way to, as an inspiration to start, but I'd then very quickly be, it would just turn into me, I think that's quite nice as well. Like you kind of think of it, like if you, I don't know, like if you're given the, like if you never heard, it's like the obvious thing. Like if you never heard, I don't know, One More Time by Daft Punk, but you were given all of those samples, like the raw samples, like the original ones, not like, it sounds like One More Time. You would not be able to make One More Time. No. You know what I mean? Or like, any kind of classic kind of a song. Yeah, everyone would do it differently, as we know sort of thing. So it's kind of like, I just think that, yeah, I do it a lot. I just have like a record or a song that I'm like massively influenced by, and I'd be like, oh yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to do something similar to that. But then quite easily I'd be like, oh yeah, but I'd be listening to like a jazz record or something, and I'd be like, oh, I love that kind of what they do in that. And I'm like, well, maybe I could do something in this song. So, you know, it's kind of like I'm always fusing little different ideas together. Mm. So, yeah.
Do you listen to a lot of jazz?
Not as much as I used to, because I'm, but yes, but yeah. I'm kind of stuck in my old kind of jazz that I kind of grew up with my dad sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then a few newer sort of things when I get the time, but I don't explore. I'm not like a jazz aficionado or anything, you know, and I don't really go out there and try and find. I sort of know the ones that I know and listen to regularly and find a few new ones, but not much. But it's a really big part of what I like. But, you know, I think it's probably more me being a guitar player and the sort of stuff that I was learning growing up, a lot of it was jazz as well, and I'm a guitar player person, so I'm a musician person, like drummers and guitarists and like all kind of like session players and everything. Like it just, I'm obsessed with, like, in any kind of genre. I just find them fascinating. So that's usually my kind of a thing. It's like I listen to a lot of music for its technicality and kind of craftsmanship from musicians, you know.
Yeah, it's. I think, as I don't know about you, but as a producer, it's actually something that kind of not ruined music for me, but kind of changed the process of how I look at records. And rather than a lot of the time, rather than actually listening to records because I love the records, it's me listening to records to work out how they actually did it.
Mm.
Is that similar for you?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I think so, but yeah, I guess probably, yeah, I guess so, but it didn't, nothing got ruined. I think again, I'd start to look into how they'd, I mean, give me an example of what, you know, one for you.
I don't think I think ruin's the wrong word, but I think it changed, like, it just changes the whole process for me. It's like, let's just use that Exile record for me.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd love to actually go deeper into the process of how they made that record. And like, if you look at it on an outside perspective, it's very easy. It's a few chords and a song, but we all know that it's not that simple. And we all know that the process didn't go down that route. And how did they process the vocals and how did they process the piano and all of that? And that's, for me, is like something that I love. I love trying to work that out, and I love going into the studio and going like, okay, let me try and work this one out of how they did that.
Mm.
Or like, I write for other people sometimes, and a couple of weeks ago I had somebody in the session and I was like, okay, this vocal gives me a feel of like this record. So let's go and not recreate this the original record, but like, let's go do something similar and get this, so we get the same feel, because we know that record was extremely successful and it's not necessarily there's not necessarily one part of that record that made it successful. It just was the feeling of that record. So how do we recreate that feeling? And I think that's, for me, is like, especially listening to electronic music, I'm like, how did they do it? Like, for me, Maceoplex is like the one for me where I'm like, yeah, I just don't know how the fuck he does that every time.
Yeah. Well, I guess on my art, something similar to that, I guess it's quite the same actually, but Bon Iver is like literally one of my favorite artists, yeah, like ever, like obsessed with him. And specifically like the last two albums were like ones that I just, you know, which is surprising, because when I first heard both of them, I actually wasn't into them when they came out.
Yeah.
And then I'd see him on tour and I'd be like, oh my God, these are the best songs ever written in the world. Like, it's just so, so good. And like, and it sort of like switched weird. Like, I think Bon Iver's a good example, actually, going back to what we were saying before. Yeah. Like, you can listen to his first album and then afterwards you'd be like, oh, I just want the guitar. Yeah. But he's just so good. Like, he just sounds, you know, he's incredible what he does now. So yeah, those two, like, I've really become obsessed with the recording process of those two albums and what they did, and to the point now where I've read so many interviews with everyone involved in the making of those albums, including, you know, Justin as well and everything. And I'm fascinated by it. And I kind of do what you're saying, because I get it. Like, it's, I basically kind of, you know, we'll sit down and do something. And this is what's happened on my last release, actually. On the track Sequoia, the second one, there was a moment where I put in this like sax. It's got this sax kind of a loop in it, which is really rare. Like, I would never usually put a saxophone in a track, because I'm not a fan of saxophone necessarily. You know,
it's like headcanny circa.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. It's screamy. You know, you think really,
sax, yeah.
But this is kind of, you know, this is definitely a little bit more. Not alternative, I guess, a bit more jazz sort of a thing.
Tasteful,
so it's,
tasteful in your opinion.
Tasteful. And so, and that really reminded me of a part in one of the tracks on, I think it was on 22 Million on Bon Iver's album. Like later on, kind of just, you know, like some of the wistfulness kind of a sounds that he manages to get, like especially the end of some of his songs.
Yeah.
It just feels like this beautiful melancholy song that's trailing off, and you hear these little glimpses of like nice piano, and I'm like, oh God, I love that piano. What piano does Bon Iver use? Okay, so I'm looking, I'm like, okay, watching videos, seeing him in the studio, I'm like, okay, piano is okay, right, I got that. So I'm like, okay, so this type of piano from this country, from that era, I'm like, okay, should I go and buy one, or should I actually should I start to like find samples that is like, I'm going to try and create that sound.
Yeah.
And so I go down that path. And then the same with like, you know, like the saxophone sort of thing. And I'm like, how does it sound on the Bon Iver record? Or like, it also reminds me of a Sting record where there's a sax sort of a sound, tenor sax. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try and mimic that, because I know that's the sound that I'm after. Cause it's kind of like what I'm drawing my influence upon. So yes, from a geeky kind of like studio point of view, I'm obsessed with that stuff. Yeah. Like I am like, I latch onto something and I'm just like, I make like documents out of like, okay, this person uses that. And I'm like, I'm not going to go and buy all of it, because I don't need to, but it helps you understand the process of what they've done or what's potentially going on to get that sound. And you can usually recreate it, but again, I'll start to go and recreate it, and I'll quickly find something else and I'll be like, that's wicked, like I like that. I'm not desperate to recreate it. It's just, it's given me really nice inspiration to, you know, to get to a happy place, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I think it's the process of trying to recreate it gets you to another point of recreating it, where you're not actually recreating it, you're just doing, you're going back to being yourself as an artist, and you're like, okay, well, this is what Tim Green would do as an artist.
Exactly. That's the thing. And I think there are some people out there that don't need to do that. They can just sit down and they can hone it and craft it, and they know exactly what they kind of want, or either that, or they're just happy and they don't care. They're just gonna like, oh, that works, you know. I don't know, you know, but
I'm similar to you. I'm a huge like feels type of person. Whether that, yeah. Like, I love soul. Funk and soul is like one of my favorite kind of genres. And I think most people probably are able to get that from my music because I sample a lot of it, really. But like, for me, it's like, how do, like, that, for me, that was the most perfect era of music. It was like the most, not authentic, but like the most real time for music for me personally, where it's like, you just have a bunch of people just writing amazing records. And like, they were all so successful. Like, bear in mind, yes, they didn't necessarily have the most successful careers because of the way the industry was set up and the political side of it. But like, they were all unbelievable musicians or unbelievable singers or unbelievable writers. Whereas you had to be good to get through. It wasn't a case of like you had like a good social media following or whatever. You had to be really fucking good. I love that era. But like, again, for me, it's like I'm changing the process of how I write at the moment, and it's very much okay, let me go write a funk and soul song. Let me completely write no electronic records and then take that record that I've written and then turn it into a club record.
Exactly.
And it's changed like everything for me. It's made me not want to write club records to a certain level where it's like, okay, I'm putting a kick drum on it, but I'm not really writing a club record to it. It's like, how have you find that? Because I think with like what you say, organic house, it's feels like the parameters are a lot wider than everything else.
Yeah, massively. And I think that similar to what you said just now, like my Invisible Minds project, the band thing, it's kind of a similar thing. It was like a little bit of, you know, I always did that as a intention to like ticking off the list. I always wanted to do a live band, and that was it. And I had like the time of my life doing it. It was just so much fun. But it was that beautiful escape to try to do something different, to do something that's, and it made me learn so much about writing music and playing music live. And then I did completely fueled back into the what I'm doing. And I think that's why I'm where I'm at. And that's why, Organic House, I just think it has just got such a, wider sort of possibilities, I think, to it, that the goalposts are wider or whatever. I don't know what it is. Like, there's more, we're given more rope to hang ourselves with or something. Like, it's just kind of like, it's just got that, you know, I guess the parameters are just a little bit more open rather than, and maybe it's got a lot to do with the fact that it's a newish genre or sort of a sound that it hasn't been chiseled away by so many different artists yet to the point where it's like, no, that's organic house. You know, I guess it's maybe still finding its way or something. But, you know, it massively speaks to me to be able to just, as I said to you before, like just trying to put in as much musicality as possible. It just allows me to do it. Like, I just think,
my view on it is that it's not actually about, why is Siri coming up? My view on it, and this is just an outsider point of view for your genre. So this is, please tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I think because it doesn't feel like there's any, like, this isn't made for a moment. This isn't made for a purpose. So this isn't made for 5 o'clock in the morning. This isn't made for a massive festival. This isn't made for a tiny venue. This is purely, we're just writing music that people want to listen to. And I think that's what allows the parameters to be a lot wider, because it doesn't have to fit. Like, that's my view on it.
Right. I think you could be right. You could be wrong as well, because I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah. But it sounds right to me. That's the way that I think about it. Mm. But that's just my music. I guess I'm still being a little bit selfish, and I'm not thinking about trying to create or add to this organic house scene necessarily. I'm really trying to do my own thing, and I hope that as many people get enjoyment out of it as possible. That's literally it. But I do think of it that way, that I just kind of think I'm just trying to write music, really. Mm. So it just happens to be within dance music. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and that's just kind of the way I think about it. I said this recently to someone else, I think actually in an interview or something, but I might even be in the wrong genre of music. You know, I don't even know. Maybe I shouldn't even be bothering to try and work in dance music. Maybe I should be doing something else. But I absolutely fucking love dance music. Yeah. And it is a challenge, as I said, to try and fuse as much musicality into these tracks as possible, which I enjoy. I enjoy that kind of a challenge. It's yet again something, I think we need challenges, and I think we need to do stuff that's a bit different, because it, you know, creates more creativity, I think, you know, much like what you said, like you went off and, you know, did a funk soul record, like that's a challenge, you know, that's hard to do, but you learn so much from doing it rather than just trying to write dance music, you know. Like I've said this a lot to I don't know if you know, but like during COVID I was doing a lot of what I call consultation sessions.
Okay.
I was like,
no,
doing,
I didn't know this.
Do you know Sound Better, the platform?
I
put myself on there during COVID and was doing a lot of consultation sessions, just where like I would basically say to people, look, if you want to do a session with me, like we can do anything you want, like just track feedback right up through to specifically working with our DAWs open and helping finish songs, write melodies, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if people got annoyed with me either. I guess it depends on the people, but I'm always talking probably more than doing, because I'm always trying to tell people as much as possible, like, you need to think about what you're doing musically. You need to have conviction in what you're doing. I don't think it makes sense to sit down and just be like, okay, 16 bars, I need to do the intro. Okay, then 8 bars, we do a little breakdown, and then it's like 32 bars of this, and the synth comes in, and it's like I'm bored already. Like, you know, you need to have a voice, you need to have something to say. So yeah, if you grew up listening to hip hop, then put that in, put something that you love in there. If you grew up listening to classical, then, you know, write classical, and then just put a kick drum underneath it or whatever. You know, just try and do something different, but try and draw upon what you're doing. When you try and just, you know, as we know, when a copy becomes a copy and another copy, it just gets weaker and weaker. Yeah. You know, so you kind of need to do your own thing and just, you know, make it as unique as possible and as real as possible. You know, I think it's just much, much more important to do that. And so that's what I was always telling people, is like, just try and do something. Try and do something, you know, different. Just don't just try and like, stop watching YouTube tutorials where it's all about production and like how to produce and how to produce. Like, it really annoys me. Like, it's so many of these, every single channel talks about producing, how to produce, production tips. No one's talking about how to write dance music. Well, they're not talking about how to write a song.
I'll be honest, sorry to butt in, but I have to say it, but I think it's because this is going to piss a lot of people off, but I don't think the people that are teaching you how to produce on those channels are actual people that are writing music.
You're right.
They're very talented.
I never thought about it.
They're very talented engineers. They're not the producer writer. And like, I wouldn't class myself as a very talented engineer, but I can write music as the same as you. I'm sure your writing skills are, I'm sure your engineering skills is great, but I'm sure your writing skills is a lot better, and you worry about your writing way more than the engineering side of it.
100%.
And I think that goes back to what we were saying right at the beginning. It's about being authentic of who you are. Like, are you somebody that is really geeky and just wants to be a really good engineer and wants to be able to like mimic everybody? And if you are, then that's great. We all need people like you.
100%. Yeah.
Or are you somebody that wants to be a writer, I wouldn't say saying true artist is disrespectful, because I feel like an engineer is an artist as well in their own way. But I think somebody that writes songs and doesn't look to recreate, I think that's the difference.
100%.
And yeah. I don't think you can teach that.
No. Well, no, I guess not. But at least people should be saying it, you know, instead of like, because it feels to me like there is like, I think people will go much further. And I guess I'm talking about, you know, newcomers or whatever. Like, they would go a lot further if they spent half the time on production and half the time on music, let's 100%. Say at least, because you do have to learn, you know, as we know, production is extremely important and you have to have it. And a song can be ruined by bad production, yeah. But like, no one turns around and says, oh, have you heard that new song by such and such? Like, the production is amazing. The song's fucking shit. Production, amazing. Love it. Like, no one says that. No. It's the song. Like, and no one turns around and says, God, this song's so good, but the production's like, oh, just so naff. They just feel like it's a banger. Like, I'm 100% going to play that. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like, because it's got genuine, you know, authenticity coming through, and the listener can hear it, you know.
I think that's the amazing thing about the beginning of house music, of how, if you look at the production side of value, like, even like, this is no disrespect at all, this is absolute, like, Armin van Helden, you go and listen to some of his old records and you're like, sonically these sound shit. They fucking are amazing records.
You didn't have production levels of different levels of, like, you know, it was hit or miss back then, you know. And like, no one, as we know, like, technology was so different back then, they were not, most of them were not then getting passed over to like a Don studio engineer who was like making everything sound awesome, because it was still quite underground, well, for the most part anyway. But it wasn't important. And even for us, like, when we started, like, there wasn't any YouTube channels teaching us how to produce or to do anything sort of thing. It's flooded now.
Yeah.
Absolutely flooded. But I do think, drawing exactly what you said, like the earlier sort of stuff, like, it's still wicked. It's still great, like, because it's good songs.
It still gets played. Still gets sampled. Like, and this is the thing. It's like, it's really interesting you say that, because I've never really thought about that people are good producers and not looking at the writing or not looking at how good. And that makes complete sense. I'm sure you do. I get sent so many records that my response is like, the production's fucking great, but the song is not. And that's my personal opinion. Somebody else might love that song, but still, like, you know a good song when you hear a good song, whether it's in your genre or not. Like, I did like a listening session for somebody the other day, or for like a bunch of people, and like, there was like a couple when you're like, this has got beans. Like, this is fucking dope. It's not there yet production wise, but it's dope. And then thinking about it, and then there's other records that are like produced really well but are shit records.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a hard thing, and it's a hard thing to get that balance. Like, that's when we know we've hit, you know, found gold, is because you've managed to produce a track that's just like flawless, and you've got a song which is like catchy as well and hits all the right things. That's when you're just kind of like, oh, that's it. Like, I'm so proud of myself to be able to do something like that, you know. And it doesn't happen all the time. There's always, you know, as we know, we're never 100% happy with our records, like, ever. There's always something there which we think we could have done different, but you have to let it go after a certain point, otherwise you'll never finish it. But, you know, at least to get them, you know, the music side there. I'm still like a victim of it as well. There's definitely records that I've done where I think they could have been better, but I'm still happy to release them because I still like them, but there's, you know, it's definitely, production's definitely gone up, as we know, for every reason, technology and people. Like, there are new producers nowadays, but they're producing something like, that sounds so good.
Yeah.
Like, so, so good. I don't even know how they did it, but
I think it came out of the whole, like, for me, from looking back, it's like the whole Deadmau5 and Skrillex era, where I don't know if, about you, but like for me, Deadmau5's sound, songwriting and production was unbelievable, but the production was just like, how the fuck has he made this? And Skrillex was the same, where like he took a genre that came very organically from dub reggae and drum and bass and turned it into, did the Deadmau5 on it and turned it into this sonically insane genre. And like still to the level of how he produces as a person, like a lot of people are like, I don't know how the fuck he does that.
I know, it's wicked, isn't it? I love that fact. Like, yeah, Sonny is like something else.
Yeah,
like he really is. He's like, his production is insane. Like, yeah, I mean, it's, it is. But what, so you think that like in, like that was kind of like, but those two individually or together or whatever, like you think those two kind of, what's the word, inspired, I guess, or kind of like pushed people to get better production, you think?
I think
across any genre or just within that kind of a sound?
I think within like electronic music personally, like I think that was the era where YouTube was coming up.
Yeah, that's true.
People could kind of show, like Ableton was getting popular then. Like everyone was on laptops. Everything was just a lot more portable, a lot more cheaper. Like you didn't need. Yeah. I know we were before that. We were still on computers and stuff, but it just felt like that was the era where like CDJs came in. Like everything became a lot more digital and a lot more accessible. Which then made it easier to learn how to produce records.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's, I think it's, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, it's, this was, do you also feel like, you can go back through your records, and I don't mean yours, I mean like, you know, stuff that you bought to DJ with or whatever, and you can go back and I don't know about you, but I can't remember every record. I'm not like super detailed about all of it, but I can, like, let's say I still have everything like on my iTunes or whatever. Yeah. So I always have what I've used to organize my playlists and whatnot and what I'm gonna play out. I could jump back to, like, you know, blindly jump back to a track, or if it's on shuffle or something, and I can pretty much guess the year, but only because of the production of like the drums or something.
Yeah, yeah.
The production of the drums are the thing that seems to most specifically seems to get better and better as time's gone on, due to I guess technology and people learning what to do. I guess or something. Yeah. But you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think. Totally, until we get to like now, when I think it's actually going back a little bit because people are referencing old 90s records.
Yeah, totally.
So it's true. I think 100% agree with you. And I think this is the really interesting thing, going like kind of full circle, going back to the Dirty Bird thing. And I think at that point in, when Dirty Bird was really popular in Europe, like they were doing, the production level was very high.
100%. It's so crisp, so fat, so like punchy. And
it's like, how can you make a bass line pop through that well? And no one else was doing it. And I think that's the thing, is like what these guys were doing, they were actually taking like hip hop and drum and bass and going, let's turn it into club records, let's turn it into house.
Yeah.
And that wasn't done before, which makes sense why it was such a standout genre of like, and it would take all the influences. And it's similar to what's happening now, is like you hear all these 90s records, 90s sounding records, old rave records that like realistically the punters of today that are going to venues have never heard the originals because they're like in their 20s and they were born in the 2000s.
Yeah.
Which they didn't ever grow up with that 90s stuff. So it's like now it's being recreated. It's really interesting.
But they're loving it, which is what speaks pretty high volumes, doesn't it? If you think about it,
massive.
Like they're not on the dance floor going, oh, hang on, this sounds a bit dated. They're kind of like, this is the energy that the drive in this is like, you know, everything about it is just like, because again, it speaks to like all of us really, or anyone who likes music at least, have like a raw rhythm, sense of rhythm inside us, you know, like everyone has rhythm, heartbeat alone, you know, like we're used to rhythm in our life, etc. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for simplicity and just like going back to something that's a bit more kind of like roots. And I, again, I'm not, you know, that kind of is like the opposite of what I do. I'm kind of like as technical and extreme as possible, but that's just me. I don't write music thinking mine's the best and the ultimate. I'm just offering an alternative, you know. I kind of want all sounds and genres to coexist, and everyone to be able to have choice, and hopefully everyone to be diverse enough to listen to all of it, you know. It would be really nice, but instead of thinking one rules the other, but that raw kind of like sound is just, you know, I don't think anyone can argue with it when you hear that.
No.
You know, in a club it's just kind of like this wicked, like, oh, you know, simple, stripped down, you know, got all the elements you need, off you go.
straight to it. There's no, like, I think because there's zero thinking about it, you don't need to think about anything. Like,
no.
You know when this is going to happen, you know when that's going to happen, and fucking massive kick drum. What more do we need? Like a Hoover sound. Like, what more do we need?
No, yeah, exactly. No, you're right. And it's, and again, that's like so much to do with... again, like, you know, when the people, like when I do consultation or whatever, like, I speak to people about, like, again, when you think about putting things in sounds, and I talk to them about effects, like what are effects? Like they're, most of the time their main job is a signal to signify something that's about to happen or something that's happened, or to amplify something, you know, like a crash. It's like, oh, we're at the beginning of something new, or a reverse whoosh sound or whatever, you know, like a transition. Like something's happening. It's to build suspense, you know? So yeah, like a Hoover sound is a big signal of like, yeah, here we go. Like, you know what I mean? Like, like this kind of like, it's an effects button to make you think, ah, oh, shit, something's happening. You're like wicked, you know? It's like, so yeah, like that strip back kind of like simple, kind of like just only the bare essentials, you know, this you can't, I don't think you can match that. And I think that's kind of like what I actually really love about like some really hard, like techno sort of stuff. It's, I can't listen to it for too long, but you can't match the energy. There's just, it's just, again, it's that raw kind of like just pounding, relentless. Love it, absolutely love it. Like, it's great, you know.
And it's great for a moment. It's great when you're at that point in the venue when you want it, and
exactly,
this is exactly what it's made for. It's not made, like we said, it's not made for doing the dishes. Maybe some people like it.
Maybe some people, but for the most part,
I'd like to think most people don't. But yeah, it's, and I think that's the thing I love about what we do is we're so fortunate that there's so many different genres. It's not like, it's not hip hop. It's not pop. It's like there's no parameters really. We can do what we want if you're willing to kind of push the parameters and you're willing to kind of just stay at it and just run the course, because eventually people will catch on to it.
Exactly.
Eventually, if you're making good music.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I definitely agree with that. I think pushing, and I've said this for years and I still think it's true. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I still think dance music is still or electronic music is still the most current and modern genre of music that there is.
Yeah.
You know, let's be honest, like rock had its thing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's dead or anything. It's definitely not dead. I don't think it ever will be dead, but it can't reinvent itself anymore. Whereas electronic music seems to find ways that it can, due to the obvious fact that it's based around technology, and technology is, you know, ever advancing sort of a thing. So I do think that thinking about, you know, pushing towards the future, I mean, like, it's ridiculous to think that Daft Punk still, like, no one ever has sounded like them since, and no one ever will. And they were so futuristic.
Yeah.
You know, everything about them was aliens from, you know, from another planet, and we are the future or whatever. You know, complete visionary sort of way of thinking about electronic music, and I love that kind of an idea. And I'm not saying everyone should, well, it'd be cool if everyone tried to be as pioneering as Daft Punk, but at least I do think to, I think pushing electronic music forward is a really good thing. And I think it comes from, like what you said, like fusing sounds and things together creates that. Yeah. I think it kind of, you start to find different avenues and sounds and channels to sort of, to try something new, you know, to try and again, going back to what we were saying, if, most especially if you're trying to fuse something that you feel really strongly about, music that you grew up with, or your culture or your heritage, is wicked, because that's just genuinely you and you're trying something new or different.
Yeah.
And a lot of people always think, oh, it's all been done before, but I disagree. Like, I think you haven't been done before. Like,
100%.
I'm someone new. I'm someone who is going to say something. I'm not expecting it to change the world. It might do, but probably not. But I might change something, you know. So it's worth trying. And I think that's when you get really interesting original music, is because you're trying to keep it trying to do something, you know.
Do you think Daft Punk thought they were revolutionary when they were making the records?
I don't know. It's such a good question. I really don't know. You would not have any ill feelings towards them if they did, because they were. I don't know if they thought that. I don't know. I don't know if they had. I really don't know. I don't know if they, you know, even if they did, I doubt it would have been any level of arrogance. I think it just would have been like, wow, we've really done something. Mm. Yeah, is what I'd imagine. But again, they were just, I mean, it's just to try and simplify, because it's way more than this, but they just had records from their parents, if I remember rightly, that they were just sampling, and that's what they were twisting into this incredible stuff with new technology. They were doing it obviously way better than anyone else, in my opinion, but it was still them, again, drawing upon something that they grew up with. It was just like they just, and that spoke so much to me. That's the reason why I'm here, is because of Daft Punk. Like, I got into electronic music because of them, and it was exactly the same to me, that the records that I could hear them, I recognised when I was listening to those albums, I recognised those samples because I grew up with them as well. So it totally changed my perspective on what music can be. I didn't even know what sample was when I heard them. I had zero idea. I was like, how do you even do this? You know, I had no idea. I literally had no idea. Yeah. I asked my friend, like, I went to music college in Kent, and it was my best friend Tom who played it to me, and changed my life. And everything. I think I might have heard One More Time on the radio, so I'd heard that sort of thing, but then he played me the whole Discovery album, and it was just he was hearing those samples and everything, and I was like, I had no idea what it was. I was there because I was a guitar player and I wanted to learn audio engineering and everything, which is equally great, but it was dance music that, you know,
changed it.
Yeah, completely changed it. And so I had to say to him, what, like, how is that happening? He's like, yeah, they're using samplers on a keyboard. I was like, what's a sampler? You know, like, I had no idea. It was a so different world to me. You know, I was just guitars and bands and everything. It's kind of similar to me. Like, after hearing that, I was like, wow, I can, and I, you know, and then again, like, you know, Call on Me or whatever, it's like sampling, you know, not that I particularly liked that sort of record too much, but it was just hearing that kind of, you know, and the all of the French house stuff, all the sampling sort of stuff really spoke to me, because again, I was like, oh, I can actually bring what I grew up with into something that's very new and interesting, sort of a thing. And, and I think I still take that with me now. I like the, when I write music, I like the idea of fusing different sounds together to create something that I alone would probably never be able to do if I was just to purely use
totally
pure creation, you know what I mean? I always like to, that's why I like samples so much, is because it puts me into a different place, as if I was another artist, as if I was someone else, and that's enough for me to be like, oh, that's so cool, like, okay, now I know what to do, like, around that or something, you know. So Did you ever, like, do you think like that, like, in any way?
Samples, or I generally nowadays have to write with something, so with a vocal or something, but it generally, for me, it's generally a vocal. And it's like, okay, I love this record. Like, do I either recreate the record using a different vocalist and go kind of writing a whole new song, or do I just use that sample and go, fuck it, let's write a record around this sample? Like, I struggle to just go in the studio and just like write for the sake of writing now. I think I've kind of gone past that, because I'm not trying to write just strictly club records. I'm trying to write something that maybe lasts a bit longer and isn't just made for clubs.
Totally.
So it changes it up.
Yeah. I think it's important, to be honest. Like, well, but we've been through it. Like, what I'm saying is I'm the same as you. Like, I kind of just go in just for the sake of it. But I think we've been through it. Like, we know what it's like. And I think you have to go through it. I think you have to go through it just write for the sake of it, because
It's the process of being a producer. And it's like, okay, I want to write a bunch of records for my DJ sets or for other DJs to play, or I want associations. I want to be on this record label. I want to be on that record label. So I need to write something that fits on there. It's the whole part. It's the whole process of becoming a DJ producer, I think, nowadays. I don't think it's about necessarily being an artist, because I don't know if pop acts or like singer songwriters think like that. I don't know. Maybe they do, but I'm like, it doesn't feel like there's labels, and I'm massively naive to that side of the industry as well, but like, it doesn't feel like, oh, I want to be on this label because it's going to make my career. It's like, it feels like for them, it's like, I want to make the best song so that people can connect to it. Whereas in our industry, it's like, I need to get gigs, so I need to sign to this record label, or I need to sign to that record label, or whatever. It's very, very, it's very rare someone comes out with a record that absolutely pops off that isn't on a record label of some influence in dance music.
Yeah, you're right, 100% right. Well, at least I can't think of one. There might have been, but not one that springs to mind. It's not common, is it?
Well, even like for the Daft Punk stuff, like that, the label that it came out, a lot of it's on Ed Banger, wasn't it? And then was signed to a major straight after that, right?
Was it Ed Banger? I didn't think Ed Banger existed back then.
Was it Ed Banger?
No, it wasn't.
I'm thinking about Justice.
Yeah, you're thinking about Justice. Yeah, exactly. No, it was. I thought the first, wasn't the first thing just on Virgin, I thought.
Yeah,
I think, but they had a single before, which probably, oh, I'm trying to remember what it was.
I'm googling it now because Daft Punk first album label.
It was probably a French label of a subsidiary, like kind of a subsidiary of Virgin or
Virgin
something
Records.
Like that. Yeah, just Virgin.
Yeah. Which again, like, and this is, the people are going to hate me for saying this, but if that record came out on an independent record label, that music would not be heard today.
No.
Like,
100%.
And I think that's the wild thing about our industry as well, is that how much good music is actually getting lost, because you can't shout, especially nowadays.
Oh yeah.
Because you can't shout about it loud enough, because you're just in amongst it.
Because everyone's shouting loud enough about everything.
and the people that are shouting, like, let's use major labels, for example, or even Defected, or like, where realistically there's a major record label, like Tool Room, like all these big labels that are, they say they're independent, but they're majors, really.
Yeah,
because they're
relatively, yeah, for they're, sure,
they're,
exactly.
They're distributed by major distributors, etc., etc. Yeah. Like, they have teams of 30, 40 people. Like, that's a major record label. It's not an independent record label. Like, because they have the influence, the music that they're pushing outweighs anything that's coming out on an indie.
Yeah.
Which
100%.
I don't know how I feel about, because it's just the way the industry is. So there's no way to complain about it, because there's nothing you can do about it to change.
It's such a strange kind of a industry, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you think? Like, just that kind of structure, like, you know, even just going back to what you said about like wanting to get gigs, you have to associate yourself with you know, on some level, it's super cool because you're kind of like, wicked, if I get in with that crew,
yeah,
I've actually got a higher chance. And it's true. You know, if you get in with that crew, it's because you've gotten in for a reason, because your music's good enough, and therefore you're probably similar enough that you should be probably playing shows with them, or, you know, remixing some of them, and then, you know, whatever. Like, so it kind of makes sense. But, yeah, there's no other kind of world that kind of... Maybe... No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think there's anything else. It's weird.
Not on that level. Not on this kind of level, for sure. Like,
yeah, it's really weird. It's so weird. I think it can, like, also it can stop creativity, though.
Yeah.
Because I think it goes back to what we're saying is like, I have to fit in with the sound. It's like, what if, like, it happened to me massively right at the beginning of my career before I signed to Dirty Bird. I did a record on Worthy's label, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was, like, my first successful record that actually kind of, like, put me on the map a little bit. And Jamie was playing it, Eats Everything was playing it. Like, everyone was playing it. And I was like, damn, Jamie Jones is playing my records. I need to now make Hot Creation records. This record was not a Hot Creation record. It was like completely the opposite from a Hot Creations record.
Yeah.
But like my way, I was like, I need to sign a record on Hot Creations. Jamie asked for me for an EP on Hot Creations. And I was like, fuck it, let's go and write it. And I couldn't. I just couldn't write it. And I quit music for like 6 months after, because I was just like so in my head about trying to fit in with certain people's genres. And rather than actually going... what was the thing that got me there was actually me just being myself and writing records that I love.
If you did manage to write a record and Jamie sign it, like, do you think you would look back at that and be pissed off?
Who knows?
I know. Yeah. It's a bit of a,
because I think like realistically, I could say the same about Dirty Bird. I could say the same about everything. Realistically, right now for me as an artist is like my most authentic time. Like, I'm not trying to sign to an artist. I'm trying to release my records on my label. I'm trying to make music that's Will Clark Records. So like, realistically, if I was being a dick about everything, I'd be like, fuck everybody else from what I did in the past. But realistically, the past got me to where I'm at now.
Yeah. Well, I guess a different way to phrase that, maybe it's the same answer, but like, if you wrote something that was very hot creation-y at that time, that sort of a sound, just that, let's say just that, you just did one, and it wasn't something that you're proud of, just let's say, I'm just saying, just if it was like something like, would you look back at it and be, but maybe it helped you in your career, would you go back and be like, oh, I wish I didn't do that, regardless of the kind of like...
I don't think so. There's like, there's one record that I released on Defected that I regret. Realistically, one record that I fully regret in my whole career. And if Defected didn't do the Defected way of owning records, it would be taken down and I'd get rid of it.
Exactly.
That's the one record that I literally cannot stand. And I won't tell anyone what it is because they're going to listen to it. What about you?
I've got loads of hate.
Really?
I've got loads, yeah. Absolutely loads. But
what was that? Was that, are those records you hate because of the time of when you released it, or because of it's not who you are now, or because it's part of a time when you weren't being yourself?
I think all of the above, but in different...
Yeah.
For different reasons. Early on, it basically was some of the remixes I did. I did it for money because I needed money.
Yeah.
Other things were just kind of, other releases were like, I did because I had tracks floating around and I thought they were all right. And I was just being a bit too like whatever about them.
Yeah.
So I kind of released them and I listened back and I'm like, oh God, they're awful. Like, they're just shockingly bad. Like, I don't even know why I released them. But again, you know, I wanted to keep momentum up of like, you know, release schedules and stuff. So you kind of just release stuff just for the sake of it, I guess. And so, yeah, I guess that kind of a stuff. And also because, yeah, I think there was a time when I really fell out of love with what I was doing and kind of like, the dance music scene in general. I was kind of fell out of love with it for a while. And so I was just doing stuff by the numbers, I think. So, yeah, I think it's just quite apparent that or it's quite obvious now to me why I don't like them, because it just weren't very good. You know, it just wasn't really something that's coming from a genuine place again. So that's the same thing we keep talking about, I think. So
have you had a record where it's been very successful and now you don't like it?
Maybe. yes. Yeah, but
recently though? Or is that?
No, not recently. Yeah. Not like, so there's a track. I mean, I don't mind talking about this. I joke about this a lot, actually. It's not like I hate it. There's a track called Old Sunshine. I don't know if you ever heard that one. It was on Get Physical quite a while ago, actually. I don't remember what year that was.
I probably have heard it, just don't know the name.
It was quite a big track, actually. You might have heard it. It probably was like, I don't know, like 2 or 3 years after the Dirty Bird kind of like period, maybe a bit longer. I can't quite remember, to be honest. But Sebastian Leger still plays it now every now and then. Like,
wanker.
He played it recently. What was it, like 2 years ago in New York at the, you know, the Mirage, City Fox venue. Yeah. Played it there on an All Day Dream event when he closed out, sort of a thing. And like, obviously, you had so many people going, "Oh, what's this new track?" And you know, a lot of people did. Most people probably didn't even know it. You know, didn't know it's like an old one for me, something. But the crowd reaction just goes great. But it wasn't a track that I was ever too particularly happy with. And even when I listen back to it, it's a little bit like, whatever. But I did a gig with Seb recently, and I can't remember, it was Denver, I think, and he played it there, and the crowd just went insane. You know, it worked, and I was standing there going, I get it, but I just can't. There's just that obvious connection that I kind of have to it that I'm just not into it. Also, there was another one, just to quickly answer, like I did a remix of, and this is a completely different situation. Did a remix of like a Paul McCartney record, but it was actually like a remix of a remix. There was a Paul McCartney track, and I can't remember how it all got branded, but it was like Paul McCartney versus Timo Maas and James Teach. It was, I think it's like, is it 1985? I think the name of the track.
Yeah.
And I remixed their version of it, if that makes sense. Yeah. I kind of just remixed the original because I just took the original samples, just did a Paul McCartney remix. The remix I like, but I can't listen to it and I can't play it because I killed myself trying to finish it and make it perfect.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, every time I hear it, I'm like, you know, like my heart skips a beat and I'm like, oh God, I can't. You know, it's just like, I literally cannot listen to it. And I've been in rooms where like the DJ before has played it or something, or I've heard it and I've been like, I've got to leave. Just like, you know, I'm starting to get the sweats and stuff. I'm like, oh God, don't take me back to that place. You know, it's
like, PTSD. PTSD.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, I've got a few records like that where I really killed myself just to get it, what was in my mind to make that record. So it's not that I dislike that Paul McCartney thing. I just literally, I can never listen to it ever again.
Yeah.
I just can't. I think I've never played it out, actually.
Wow.
I think I've never played it out. And it did really well, obviously. You know, it's like quite a big bunch of names to be associated with.
Totally.
But I literally can't listen to that record at all. It just kills me. So I might have played it once. No, maybe I didn't even play it. I don't know. But I just... I can't even think about it. So it's different reasons, sort of thing. But
yeah, makes sense.
The Old Sunshine one, like I don't mind it. I get it, but I just don't like it. Mm. It's like this. Yeah, that's the way it is.
Yeah, I get that, mate. Let's. We've just done an hour and 45 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah, let's wrap that up. Thank you so much for coming on. How can people follow you? How can people keep in touch? All of that.
Yeah, Instagram is probably my best sort of way. Like, people should follow me on there because that's where I'm most active. Facebook as well, if you want. SoundCloud, please follow me on there. Everything's, I think, pretty much under Tim Green Music.
Nice.
You should be able to find me pretty easily. Just had a new release on All Day Dream called Eastbound Silhouette. It's kind of like a mini album, 6 tracks.
Nice.
Everybody should go and, yeah, if you want to hear, if people don't know me, go and check that out, because that's kind of like a really nice representation of the music I'm doing now. Like a mixture between, as I said earlier, like dance floor, yet very musical. It may not be for everyone, but it's what I'm into at the moment.
So. Nice. Amazing. Yeah. Dude, great to talk.
You too, Will.
I don't think we've actually met. Have we met in real life?
I was trying to think about that, and I was like, I didn't think so, but then where was I thinking that we might have met? I wondered, did we ever meet the David show in London years ago at that place? I'm trying to remember the name of it.
I didn't ever go to a David show.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, no, then we didn't then. No, we didn't. I just wondered if we did.
Yeah, then. that was my, like, if it was a David show or like just in walking. But yeah, mate, great to meet you.
You too, man.
Keep it up.
Thank you so much.
Keep in touch.
Yeah, peace. Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks so much, mate. Cheers.
And that's a wrap. Big love to Tim for coming on. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe. Please review it. Please share it. Keep safe. Till next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.